Ladies and gentlemen, I call our work session for the budget presentations by the constitutional officers to order. We will begin with the pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty. First up, out of the blocks, is the treasurer, Ms. Linda Lindhurst.
And I know why you did me first.
Because we know who the fastest is.
Short and sweet.
The budget that I presented is basically what my office needs. You can tell that I was cut a little bit in office supplies. That, gentlemen, I'm really going to need. We're hoping to get credit cards pushed through, so that's going to mean a little bit more expense far as paper. And you'll also see there's $5,800 down here in ADP equipment. That is for check scanners and printers. We use those every day, five of them to be exact. And with all the new upgrades on Munis, we're hoping we're not going to have any problems with compatibility. But Mr. Notman has been really great with working with us on the Munis upgrades. So that's basically all I have to say.
Love it. You got it. Hey, whoever's next up. Oh, Lord.
Oh, this Lord, won't be that's that short. Thank you, Mike.
She's a gold standard right now.
Next up, Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Mel Sheridan.
Thanks, sir. Amen. Can I get an amen?
And if you're under 5 minutes, you're going to get an amen, brother.
All right, under five. I'm pretty sure
you'll take out everybody else's time.
Preaching to the home team. Questions don't count against me. Y'all know the deal?
Just let me know if we're able to go to the next slide.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Y'all know the scenario. I don't need to, again, I'm preaching. I thought possibly Mr. Fairchild might have a few other questions, but y'all know. Chief Deputy, three program managers. I wouldn't trade any of them for gold. They're excellent. They were all in the career development program. Three of them have received their Master Deputy Commissioner of the Revenue Certification through Weldon Cooper. One additional one will complete it in another few months. Effectively, this is what I need to run the program. This is the operational money. I won't belabor it. The next slide's got all the detail, but it's a whopping $44,000. That's a little bit more, $42,900, predominantly associated with just the cost to attend mandatory training to keep our certification. We have to do a class annually. It's usually an overnight stay, but it's pretty much that in an annual conference. If you wouldn't mind the next one, this is the detail, but in effect it hasn't changed, but just $1,800 or so from the current year. Mr. Dahl and staff felt it was reasonable, so they supported everything I asked for, which again is $44,000 for the year to run the office, absent personnel, of course. Next one, sir. This one I thought was one that you might want to just at least kind of make sure you let me bend your ear a little bit. This is what I see as trends, and I've certainly got no crystal ball, but real estate valuations have continued to climb. We reassessed on January 1st of 2021, so we're now 14 months down the road. But since we did that, real estate just continued to climb. I'm not sure where the ceiling is. Y'all know as well as I do, the bubble's pretty high. But for the time being, I think when we talk about actual values that we're able to give you for your budget this coming, I don't guess. I give you hard numbers. We've worked with Mr. Dahl's staff. They have those already. And they get better from there. For example, I've got 60 certificates of occupancy at our office right now. We have to get picked up and added to that number we've already given Eric's office. So we know there's more money going to be, and the cost of houses has just continued to climb. It actually, since we finished the reassessment, they cut off the data they collected on 1 October of 2020 for the January 1. And in just that 90 days, it was almost a 4% growth in actual sales versus assessment. We learned one significant thing. This year, as we reassess, and I don't mean to just wander, but it's important for y'all to know, as we get ready for the January 1, 2023 reassessment, again, 10 months from now, it's just really right around the corner. One of the things that we will do differently is we will ask Pearson to collect sales data not up through 30 September and then collect the information between October and December. They're working the numbers. We want them to collect it through 31 December. That is good because it'll give us more revenue. It'll give us a reassessment that comes in closer to 100%, you know, which is that sales to assessment ratio. But it might mean that it takes us, in working with, again, Mr. Dahl's office and, of course, his staff, it pushes us a little bit further down the road when we get the hard numbers of the assessment itself. But not doing that this past year has already put us in a sales to assessment ratio window of probably 95%, 94.5%. And that's not where we want to be. But it's because real estate growth has been so darn good. But that's not the rest of the story. The real story is personal property. Everybody in this room knows the scenario. Because of the lack of new car availability, used vehicles, cars, trucks, etc., have gone through the roof. I put 35%. The national average is actually 37.5% growth. So, you know, your used vehicle didn't go down, it went up. We all know that. If you've bought anything lately, it's gone out in price. What that means is you're going to have a significant amount of additional personal property value. I implore you to consider lowering the rate. We've been 435 for over 10 years, and we are going to get a large bump because of the shortage of new vehicles. Cars and trucks, anything between 30 and 37% growth. Boats, we just got vessel valuation told us today, it was, today, they anticipate between a 7 and 10% growth in boats. So as opposed to used boats, used vehicles going down, as we might expect, they're actually increasing in value because of the cost of purchasing new ones. Won't belabor, happy to answer any questions, but again, I know I'm preaching to the A-team. So, tax relief, no significant change there. Whether it's elderly, it's holding fairly steady. Our veterans relief continues to increase just because we have a few more veterans each year that qualify and move to Fluvanna. We don't find, at least we haven't found any that, qualified 4 years ago or 5 years ago, that kind of scenario. It's basically new ones that have relocated to Fluvanna from some other place. The thing, it's a little different there, and you all know the scenario. It's not just the value of their principal residence now. It also includes one vehicle, and that is whichever, if they have more than one, it's whichever has the highest value. So, again, it's not insurmountable, but it does creep on us as we move through that scenario. Sales to assessment ratio, we anticipate it's going to drop about 3 or 4% because that's directly tied back to real estate. And real estate still, it hasn't stopped. It amazes me. And I'm not complaining about the value of homes. You just have to pay more for them than what they were assessed for on January 1st of 2021. And we anticipate about 92% is what we estimated. That hurts us on utilities. That's where it hurts us. And y'all know that. I won't belabor it. If it's 92%, we lose 8% of the utility tax revenue because they only have to pay it whatever percentage the sales assessment is.
Having said that,
yeah,
how much would it cost us to do it every year?
to do a reassessment. Well, I'd have to think about it instead of giving you a hip pocket, but we've got reassessment numbers in here. But it pushes $100,000 to do it when we are just picking up new properties and about 270-ish. Eric wouldn't help with the math. Okay. When we do a full blown.
How much do we lose with the utilities by not
honestly, the way we're doing it works pretty doggone well for our size county, and it saves us money. I mean, if we had a reassessment office, y'all have looked at that before. It just ends up costing more to bring, say, three people on staff full-time than it would be to pay a third party like Pearson to do it. But we could do it. That's what, let's see, our neighbors, Louisa, you know, Albemarle, you know, they have on board staff and they do annual reassessments. We think we're going to be a lot closer to 100 by capturing sales up through December. Unprecedented growth in real estate, and at some point it will cool off. If y'all remember, because y'all were here, we have seen us where we are 100, and instead of being 92% or 88% assessment to actual sales, we've had the reverse and been at 130%. Where we were selling, we were assessed for way more than the actual selling price. And you don't want that scenario. We don't want to see that. But because utilities will pay up to 100%, but if we go in the opposite direction and assessments are higher than sales, utilities never pay above 100%. Our citizens were paying at one time 130% of assessed value. So again, happy to answer any questions. We got the reassessment budget on that, Mr. Bell. I won't belabor that. You know, it is what it is. We pay for it. It's a pretty darn good deal. So long story short, I'll come to the last slide unless you have questions, which is...
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
You suggested that we lower the personal property from 435. Do you have a number with that?
Well, you know, I thought about that, Ms. Eager, and I don't want to sit here and pretend to know y'all's business better than y'all do. I'm telling you, I'm anticipating a 30% increase in personal property value, which is a 30% increase in the money that you will, tax money you'll generate, unless you lower the tax rate by 30%. We don't figure an equalization rate for personal property because we don't have to, but it could be easily done. So I would just suggest that as we get a little closer, we've gotten all the vehicles that have been sent off to JD Powers, which is a vehicle, you know, pricing company we use. Used to be NADA, but it's no longer that. It's called JD Powers. But I would tell you in the neighborhood of a 20% reduction is probably, I don't want to answer the phones. They're going to melt, and I'm going to tell them exactly where everybody's. Who's your supervisor? Well, this is, don't call Mel Sheridan, call Mike. It's going to be brutal.
Email Mel Sheridan at Luke.
There have been articles. I've sent y'all a few articles about the anticipated significant reduction in the assessed value for cars and trucks. Their localities, I got one today where they're just adopting percentage reduction. And most of them are in there anywhere from 20 to 35% reduction. I share that with Mr. Dahl, who can then share it with y'all. But
just to go back, are you saying that right now, so what we have in the budget as far as values for personal property, once the values from J.D. Powers comes back, we should expect to see a 20% increase?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That was going to be my next question.
What he has, because we've learned the hard way, is don't guess, work with the math we have. So we use the numbers from the latest figures we're able to push into the personal property book and last spring. So those are hard numbers. They will not change. They will go up. In fact, they will change. They will go up. And what we are being told across the board, it could potentially be as high as 35 to 38% increase.
So it was 30% last year. I mean, you came back, I think it was more.
Yes, it did, Mr. Bryan. Last year was unprecedented.
Right.
And this year, they have been preaching for 2 months, expect a dynamic increase over last year.
If I had a $10,000 car, it became a $12,000 car. car, and now it's $14,000.
And the $12,000 car may become $14,500. And we saw that last year. Remember, I picked on your vehicle, and I think, you know, Mr. Sheridan basically said, hey, your truck went up, not down.
Yeah.
And they're anticipating it to go significantly more than last year. That's why I'm asking y'all to at least put that in the back of your mind to consider lowering it. The rate, you know, we know we're at 290 for business, we're at 435. It's pretty high. You know, it's consistent. A lot of people like to compare us to, well, you know, Richmond's only $4.10. Well, Richmond's also got meals tax and transit occupancy tax and BPOL tax and a lot of local options that y'all, you know, Fluvanna hadn't elected to do. And you got to pay the bills, I understand. But for what it's worth, I hope y'all will be, I hope y'all will entertain lowering that rate. I think it's...
So you're basically talking about like a 80 cent?
Well, I could see something in the low to mid threes, 330, 340. I don't want, again, Mr. Dahl's going to do the work, but something in the low threes to would be probably, again, that would only be a 25% reduction if we went down to 325.
And just remember, too, from the last time, the per nickel amounts equates to around, you know, 130 to 135. So that's, you know, granted, when values change slightly, the per nickel value changes a little bit, but that's, you know, call it 130, 135 is kind of your estimate for thinking about if you want to drop that rate in the current budget as it is, you know, by a nickel or something like that. And now,
if you're dropping it by a dollar, you're talking about dropping a million plus
$2 million.
Well, you know, if we'll have the math, yeah. Mr. Brian, but for example, let's say we drop it to I'll just pick a number, $3.35 a dollar. That may still generate an increase in actual taxable value just because it's going to be such a significant increase. I'll give you a case in point. I priced a Ford F-150 in February of last year. And for a new four-door, and, you know, a few bells and whistles, $43,000, $43,500. That same truck today will cost you just about $70,000. And we know, just because of the lack of inventory and the increased prices, they have gone up 45%.
The F-150 I had the accident in?
Yeah.
They gave me within $1,000 of what I paid for it, and it was 4.5 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to buy a new car this year because my old Element finally gave it up. And I paid more for the 2020. In 2021, he was a year old, and I paid more than it was originally worth.
Yeah, everybody's finding out. I mean, new cars, trucks, and used cars and trucks have gone up 37.5% on average in America in the last 12 months. It's unbelievable, but that's where we are.
Anecdotally, there's a house that was just built in my neighborhood, which is similar to the house that I own, and it's being marketed for $400,000, which is about 30% over the house that I have somewhere that's assessed. Yeah.
It's
so
certainly,
I think you might see more than a 5 to 8% differentiation in the real estate sector.
I guess the bottom line is I anticipate that y'all will have a very robust tax base to work with, and I know you got bills. It's that simple. And as I pointed out, I know the audience knows, you don't have all the local option taxes some of our neighbors have. So, and then when we got one to the east that says, oh, we only got a 58 cent tax rate, ask them the second question. What's your technology fee you charge for the entire east end of Goochland? Oh, you mean that's an extra 25 cents per hundred if you happen to live east of Gum Springs? Y'all get beat up about how well one of our neighbors manages their budgets on just 58-59 cents per hundred. They don't mention that they have a technology fee that they assess to their entire business world down there called West Creek. You know, just across Tucko Creek coming back toward Goochland Courthouse, they pay 58 cents plus a technology fee that is not advertised with the real estate rate.
Small old company named Capital One.
You got it. Lastly, thank you all very much for continued support. I couldn't tell you how important that is to our office, but lastly, I always finish up it's just such a solid team effort between your county staff and your constitutional staff, and that's probably what keeps the wheels on everything and keeps us all moving forward. So thanks to Mr. Dahl and his team and to the board. Any other questions?
Yeah, and as we go forward, like I said, you know, Mr. Sharon will certainly be providing updates, and as we go through budget work sessions, you know, we'll provide those to the board and let you see what the change is from where we previously were. You know, certainly the biggest thing we don't know at this point, which we'll know next week, is what the schools are going to request, and then, you know, revenue changes from that point or any other changes the board wants
and
to change.
And my only question is, we know we're going to lose part with the veterans, which we're thankful for that.
But it's not much, you know, we're still under 100, and it will never decline, but it's, fortunately, we're not in the neighborhood of Fort Lee of, you know, Norfolk Naval Base, who's got 3,000 of the disabled veterans instead of, you know, about 65 right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, the sheriff.
What page is the sheriff on in the book?
Oh, Tori, what page? What tab in the book is the sheriff on?
Are you, will the screen give everything?
Which tab? Do we know which tab?
What side? The screen, this is just the presentation. Yeah. It's not going to have their actual budget sheet, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's
17. 17 is okay.
Thank you.
And just give me the numbers on the next one, too, if you will.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity tonight to come and speak to you all about our budget for 2023. Next slide, please. As you can see, the E911 center call volumes has increased steadily from 17 into 21. And on that note, remember last year we had to have two additional staff to cover the EMD, which is the emergency medical dispatching. That was implemented on 12/29/21, and as of February the 8th, we'd already received 390 calls for service for emergency medical dispatching. So the other day, I happened to be in the dispatch center when a call came in for someone being in distress and needed to have CPR, and I watched them dispatch that and walking the person through step by step what they needed to do. And once they started CPR, they continued communicating with them, you know, can pick up the pace just a little bit, you're doing a wonderful job, you know, the EMS team will be there in less than 5 minutes, you know, please continue. And they can monitor all this stuff, how many compressions they do and everything on the screen. It's really, really phenomenal. It's the first time I got to see that. Next. Last year we asked you, shows the number of calls there. Last year we had an increase in the budget for the evidence storage for sensitive data and mainly the child pornography and stuff. And that's the office where everything's kept and everything is stored in there. That way, none of those sensitive photos and things are ever down on our server. It stays on its own private server. Next, please. Workload. As you can see, the pandemic has continued to, we've had a decrease in arrests and a decrease in traffic. Traffic arrests have declined about 12%. And if you remember last year, July 1, there was a whole slew of new laws that came into effect. You can't stop for out, a headlight out, a taillight out. All these things that we used to stop people for. And it was our gateway to be able to search vehicles and stuff. And because of that, we basically have two reasons to stop somebody, and that's if they're speeding or if they appear to be driving impaired. So you'll see both of those down. Our the numbers on our drugs arrests have gone down, and it's because of that. You know, some people say it's a fair system now, but you know, we're still getting the ones that are impaired like the other night. So intoxicated, they had to stop. and rest, and that gave us the end. Once we smelled the alcohol, that we were able to, the deputies were able to get in the car, and we were able to seize a bunch of meth. So, but you know, that's kind of why you'll see the decrease in the number of traffic violations, is because other than speeding, we don't have a lot of things we write sentences for and more, and that in turn affects the number of people that we arrest.
Did you say that you were able to pick up a bunch of meth?
Yes, ma'am.
Why was 2020 so high, though?
Pardon?
Why was 2020 so high?
It was just, that was the year before everything, and that was the start of COVID, and everybody was wide open. The tickets for 80 plus were just out there. But some people at 100, we couldn't even catch up with. It was really, literally, people just lost all some common sense when it came to driving, and we could still stop for those other infractions. DUIDs, which are driving under the influence of drugs, and DUIs were up 29%. Motor vehicle crashes with injuries were up 5.3%. We still don't really have, until marijuana actually goes into being legalized, we can anticipate that when that does, like other states, you know, the number of fatalities go up, the number of crashes go up. It's just, you know, the data's there from other states, and, you know, are we going to say that, no, that's not going to happen here? You know, it's just we don't know until it actually happens. Animal control calls had a slight increase this last year. In the last case, Major Wells helped with, we seized 42 cows and 7 horses from a farm where the owner wasn't capable of taking care of them. The fences were in poor shape. The animals were consistently getting out. We had three serious accidents. Luckily, no one was really injured, but we were able to seize those, and the court case was settled the other day. So everything should be good there. Next slide, please. So our vehicle, our fleet is, we've got the 5 vehicles scheduled for removal out of the fleet this year completely. Currently, we do not have a spare vehicle. Our spare vehicle is our transport van. We're going to add six new patrol vehicles for 2023, and we're going to replace another patrol vehicle that was deemed, it was part of an accident, and I think last time y'all agreed to have that money put in there, so we'll probably do that. But as you see at the bottom, 20% of our fleet is currently at high mileage. So 2024, you're probably going to see us come back after we assess the fleet this year. We might have a pretty good increase in the number of vehicles that we're going to need in 2024 because of the mileage on some of them. Next, please. Civil process. Another area where, you know, because of COVID, we had the moratorium continued on the evictions. Things have kind of picked up there. All the civil papers in general, they're just not there, and it's a trend we're kind of seeing everywhere. But look at the difference from what would have been 2016. That's almost 10,000 papers. It's a lot of civil process that for some reason has kind of gone away. Now will that tick back up? We'll see how things go with the opening of the courts now that they're going really good in the jury trials and such.
Is there a significant drop in, like, eviction?
If they just have started back. They just have started back. And we've done a few, but not a tremendous amount at this time. Next slide, please. So in our budget, we requested 2.5 deputies. Even though our overall calls for service are down by about 4.5%, if you look at the next slide, we'll give you a little rundown. The animal control calls have gone up by about 1,500. So we had about at about 1,500. We put us at about 9.7% increase. Assaults, including domestics, that seems to be our trend here since COVID, up 26%. Our burglaries, breaking into sheds and dwellings and stuff, has gone up 60%. The next one, part of the, not just part of the EMD stuff, but cardiac arrests were up 127%. And of those, 11 times our deputies performed CPR before the EMTs even arrived on the scene. One of the last ones was at the nursing home when one of the new deputies had been on the job 2 or 3 days. Just went right in there, bam, jumped up, did CPR on the gentleman, and he made it. So as a first responder, it's our duty to get there and provide whatever assistance we're trained to do. And that's one of the things we keep up. We don't have AEDs. They're kind of expensive and difficult to maintain, but usually by the time we get there and start it, if they haven't talked somebody through on the phone to start it, you know, we've got some time there to buy time for the individual until we get the EMTs there to take care of them. Child welfare and abuse cases up 6.6. Destruction of personal property, 38%. Fights in progress, a lot of those. 50% frauds, just the same fraud, con games, identity thefts and stuff up 38%. Harassments, 52%. Larcenies, 15%. Unattended deaths, 93.75. And missing persons and runaways, we're at about a 10% increase there. A lot of that is from Elk Hill, where we have a lot of people down there tend to run away. A couple other things I'd like to talk about why we're asking for the increase in deputies is, if you're not aware, the Lake Monticello is in a process where they're reevaluating their police department, and they've hired a consultant who's going to make some presentations as to some options that they will have. But at this time, so maybe by the end of the month, if we're fortunate, we'll kind of know if they're going to keep their police department and or are they going to go to a private security, or are they going to have a hybrid program where they have the police department stays, but they don't have as many staff, and then they all augment that with some private security. Well, pretty much any of those options that they do are going to require more from us. So currently, in the county, we do what we call select patrols. And the deputies, when they are not on a call, they have to, like going down to Columbia, as you go into Columbia, you mark that you're going into Columbia. You drive all around Columbia, all the back roads and everything. And then when you come out, you mark out of Columbia. And then you're usually going down to Fort Union next, and you do the same thing. And that goes on throughout the county. Well, any kind of abbreviation from the lake, anything that they change, we may have to do the very same thing for the lake, which is going to take staff. So if they go to a hypothetical hybrid where, so they have staff until 11 o'clock at night, so from 11 till whenever the next shift comes on for them, that we're going to be it. So we would have to implement those extra patrols in there, as well as answer all of the calls. Not just, usually pretty much our standard now is if it's a domestic and anything more serious, we're already going there. So I foresee the increase in calls for service and extra patrols are going to go up significantly. Another variable is the amount of homes that we've had built in the county, and the future subdivisions that we see that are coming are all going to put a strain not on just law enforcement, but our EMS and fire. There is some legislation that I would like to give you all a quick heads up on that are dealing with some of the issues in law enforcement, where you hear a lot still in the media about defunding police, but Virginia is looking to be very proactive to fund law enforcement because there's such a shortage of law enforcement
whether it's a deputy sheriff, a police officer, or a state trooper in the state right now. The numbers are extremely low in some agencies. So they have just a few bills that are out there. There's one that mandates SROs in every school. The good thing is they're also funding that. There's like $23 million in the budget that mandates an SRO in every school. Additional deputy funding, we had the census. So the general consensus with the state is for every 1,500 citizens you have, you should have one law enforcement personnel. So, you know, the increase there alone, they're gonna, for the first year, 259 deputies will be added in the state. And the next year they'll add 16 more. And these are also going to be funded. They have money in the budget to fund that. Another, the compensation board currently pays for each one of our comp board deputies roughly about $38,000. And they've got a couple bills, but the best one raises that to $46,000. So that would mean more comp board funding that would come back to the county. Also in that package is an $800 performance-based increase yearly for up to 25 years to kind of keep up with compression and stuff. Then there is another bill that they've given to the state police a couple times, but they did not do deputies or corrections or jailers, and they provided, they'll provide $100 per year of service for a max of 25 years. And that kind of helps with the compression too. And those are just a few of the things that, and we have a couple more listed up there, the growth in the population. We've got, you know, how we're gonna deal with the Colonial Circuit, Circle, the Village Oaks. We talked about the lake status. Inflation, we have our cars finally, but we can't get the parts to build them. And then, you know, then there is, we don't even know what the cost of the next car is. Mel did a great job. People out there trying to buy a used car are just, it's terrible what they want. But supply and demand, it is what it is. Another good bill that's been proposed, remember we talked about the Marcus Alert? Well, if that would continue the way it was written last year, it would put unfunded mandates on each county to provide those counselors to be able to assist in those mental health calls. Well, there's two versions of the bill. One version says it only applies to municipalities that have at least 80,000 in population, and then there's another one that has it at 40,000. So that would be, you know, significantly, it would, I mean, not to say that we don't have an issue with mental health calls. We've sat on two recently for over 24 hours because there's no beds for them to even go to. But we do provide a great deal of training, and we've really never had any real issues with, you know, addressing the mental health calls that we go on. It's the biggest problem is finding a place to take them. And like on the weekend, we had three different shifts of people had to come out to help take care of this person. So, and that's where the biggest crisis is in the state, is that there are no beds for these people that need the help. But that's, next slide, please. That's all I have. Thank you for your time. Anybody have any questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you much.
Appreciate it.
And just, board, just one thing, too, just kind of touch on what Sheriff Pass said. There, as he said, there's lots of bills out there that are kind of outstanding that are being discussed in the General Assembly. You know, one, there's a bill regarding the budget amendment that he talked about for the one deputy per 1,500 right now for Fluvanna. That's looking like funding for two deputies if that moves forward. It's funding for two deputies. No, it doesn't say if it offsets what the county's already paying or if it's two new additional deputies. Also, as he also discussed, You know, one thing that we didn't budget for in this budget is that differential between the 38,000 base up to potential 46,000 per each state supported deputy. Without knowing what that's gonna, where that legislation's gonna go, that could also provide some additional funding. In my budget, again, remember I did include a 5% across the board increase for all employees, and the funding from the compensation board, that piece has been included in my budget, because that's kind of a more of a known quantity. So,
and in our, I failed to mention in our comp board budget that we sent in, I did ask for those two deputies. Just like last year, we asked for a deputy from the county, and y'all were gracious enough to give that to us, but the comp board actually gave that position to us also.
I will tell you, this much, I went down, we had a meeting in Richmond last Thursday. I went down there, and one of the things that they're talking about is for y'all to be able to take them to the hospitals and drop them and then come back so we have service. And some of the larger counties were raising Cain about that, going, you know, that's ridiculous that you can't leave them there. They have nobody there to take care of them. You need to leave the deputies. And it's a valid point. She's a healthcare provider. And I just spoke up and I just said, listen, I said, and correct me if I'm wrong, we have three overnight deputies or four?
Time. We have them staggered. After two, there's usually only
two. Okay, well, I told her, I said, you know, that's fine for a county the size of y'all's. I said, because y'all have probably 100 officers on duty. I said, we have three. I said, three. I said, you take two of ours out of county to do that and make them stay. We're down to one deputy to cover our entire county.
Well, we're really having, because of that, we're having to pull people in and on
overtime.
And, you know, just like that 24 hours that this weekend, that was all court people, and that was all overtime. How many hours was the one before that?
Seven.
Yeah.
And that's not including 8-hour BCO periods. You're looking at 32 hours.
We've heard them go even longer.
Yeah.
So.
Thank y'all. All right. Next up is Commonwealth Attorney, Mr. Harry Hazel.
All right.
And I'll just call you Jeff Harris.
Take this off so y'all can hear me, and I don't hyperventilate.
And tab 16, if you want to look in your budget book.
There's not a lot there. It's the same budget we do just about every year. But I did want to just say, as Mel said, I know as a citizen, Linda and Mel are doing a great job, and their staffs are great. But working with the clerk's office and the sheriff's office every day, I don't want it to sound like an insult to anybody that's come before us, but county, from a law and order perspective, is in as good a shape as it has ever been. The deputies are great, and Trissy's staff is great to work with. And I realized today when I was introducing the chief deputy from Louisa County around, he came over to talk about a couple things, and I introduced my staff to him, and I realized, you know, I should have known this long ago because I work with him every day, but everybody in my office had done their job for a long time in another place before they came to my office, which I hadn't had before. We'd always had a paralegal that came from some other walk of life, or a secretary that became an administrative assistant who hadn't been a legal secretary. And I wondered why things were going so well. I figured it out today, so good day. As far as the changes, Sheriff mentioned some of those things. I'll start with referring back to his last couple of slides. The General Assembly has not made it easy on any of our offices as far as some of the changes they've made in jury trials, and Sheriff mentioned traffic stops and things like that. I know the reasoning behind a lot of them, but you know, they've really, in some cases, really added a lot of work to all three of our offices. The change in the jury trials, particularly, we're having jury trials just set out way into the future. People are asking for juries that never would have before because the jury can't sentence anymore. And it used to be that was the thing they were leery of, is that the jury might sentence them harshly. Well, now they don't have to worry about that. So we're having people in cases that never would have been set for a jury now set for juries, which adds to the work for the clerk's office, the sheriff's office, and our office in preparing for trials that most times they come in and plead guilty at the last minute anyway. But we are not asking for any additional staff. I've got staff that has absorbed that work right now, so we're not asking for that. But I did want you to understand that it's been kind of I feel like a child in a custody dispute sometimes with the General Assembly. Last year it was one way, this year they want to do something else, and our rules are changing almost, certainly yearly, but it seems like more frequently than that sometimes. So, but we're hanging in there. But I wanted to just touch on a couple things with the budget. You'll see some lines that went up, and there's an explanation for that. The office supplies and some of the other operating expenses went up, and we're talking $977 in one line and $600, I think, in the other. So it's not a lot, but if you're wondering about that, our victim witness director has a federal grant that provides a portion of her budget. And this year, last year, she was audited. The department was audited. And in a 180-degree flip-flop from their prior policy, they said, you don't need to keep a line-by-line budget for you. And your expenses, that whole amount can go to the county, which is great for the county because it assures that you all will get the benefit, the county will get the benefit of the entire grant every year. Whereas at the end of some years, she was having to spend that money in those budget lines that they made her put, $5,000 in this line, $2,000 in this line, and wouldn't, it was very difficult, if not impossible, to move it out of those lines. So some years she was buying cups and pamphlets and things at the end of the year. Now all that money, she'll buy what she needs. It'll come out of our office supply line, which has gone up to represent that. But she won't feel the need at the end of the year. And it's an unfortunate thing that we go through in a budgetary process. But, if the grant's there and you don't spend a significant amount of that, then they wonder whether you really need it. So that pressure's gone now. So everything, that's the reason that all those lines have gone up a little bit. But it will be a net win for the county because you'll get the entire amount of that grant every year. That's really everything. Our numbers haven't changed. We're not asking for anything different. We're trying to cut some costs in our legal books, our books and publications. We get everything online now, and I'm really looking at every book that we get in hard copy. And when's the last time we opened that book? And these books are not cheap, but it's just in a law office. You feel like you've got certain books and certain code sections that we upgrade and we have the hard copy of, but. With the computer and the laptop and the iPad, it's just, I want to be realistic and not pay for something just because it's something that's always been part of the office library. If we're not using it, we're going to cut that. And I think that we may be able to trim a few $100 next year from not re-upping some of the subscriptions on some of those books. But I'll close by just mentioning something, and I hope I don't steal any thunder from Trissy because she's got two budget items that this affects. But we started our drug court a year ago. Our drug treatment court with you all's blessing and little financial assistance, and we got that grant. And we now have 10 people in the drug treatment court. We have one person in phase four of a five-phase program, so he's on his way, to finishing successfully. We have three people in phase three, three people in phase two, three people in phase one, and they're all doing. We got our docket for tomorrow, and we get an update from our director, and they are all doing very well. It's just amazing. Some of these people we've seen most of their lives and half of mine coming in and out of the court system to be sober for as long as they have and to be getting jobs and, and doing community service if they're not working, that type of thing. So it's been great. It's been a great year. And I thank y'all for, chipping in that money to make that happen. We do have one person, as drug courts do, that's an absconder. I'm not going to candy coat it, but we have one person that we're praying the sheriff's office finds her before she does any harm to herself, but she had a relapse and is on the run, which happens in these programs. But I can't calculate because I really don't know the number of jail days that we've saved the county on these 10 individuals, but I guarantee you the number of days these folks have been in jail in the last year is a tiny fraction of what they would have if they weren't in the drug court program. So it's saving y'all money every day. So thank y'all.
All ages?
Yes, we have all ages. I don't have a breakdown by race and gender, but we have women, we have men, we have folks in their, I guess, their 40s and folks in their 20s. And, as the opioid drug addiction is, we have all races and genders because all races and sexes are affected by it. So
that's why the count's that low, to be honest.
Well, it could be a little bit more, but we have to be selective because we're in the process of trying to hire a case manager. Because right now our director is acting as case manager, and she's juggling 10 different cases, which I mean, she has to make sure they're there for all their treatments, they're there for the Zoom meetings and everything, the drug test, which is random 7 days a week. So
not everybody gets to participate in the program?
No, and some people, because the statute eliminates some people, and most people that are eliminated because of the statute. You can't have a violent crime, there are certain things that you can't, like distribution and of a certain amount. You know, obviously we realize drug dealers sometimes will sell and share with their friends and colleagues, but if you were selling a certain amount that indicated that you were a serious dealer, it would be detrimental to the people in drug court if a dealer was in there with them, and you know, you don't want that influence. So the folks that we've turned down have almost all been because of their prior criminal record, but it is, until we get a case manager, I think we could probably take 2 to 5 more, but she would, I don't want to chase her off, because she's great. And right now she's working full tilt. So, but it's going great. We'll let you know when our first member graduates, and I hope some of y'all can make it. Any questions?
Thank you, Mark.
All right, man. Thank you.
Ms. Treadway? Clerk of the court,
and
she's also doing the circuit court judge.
Yeah, but her tabs are 14 and 15 in your budget book.
I'm a little disappointed she's not wearing her outfit, though.
Sorry. I could have if you had wanted me to.
14 and 15.
So the reality of my budget is, you can see there, I'm asking for about a $33,000, almost $34,000 increase. However, it's not really an increase. Since I became clerk, I've been awarded about almost $150,000 in grants that I've applied for and received. And this year I got our biggest grant, which was $47,000. So the increase, because it's a pass-through, it looks like my budget increased. However, you're going to get that back, all of that back. So it's sort of deceiving to look at. As far as our revenues for this coming year, our best estimate, and my numbers guy in the office is pretty good at estimating close to $1 million in the revenues coming up this year. Now, that does include, I will say, that includes our comp board reimbursements and stuff, but I'll go over our taxes and things that we have collected. If you want to go on to the next slide. This is really just some of these slides are more, not necessarily for my presentation, but for your perusing at a later time. Some people are more visual than they are looking at a spreadsheet, so this just shows you that the majority of our expenses is our salaries and your FICA and all of those things that go along with personnel. So you can go on. This number actually is incorrect, and I didn't pay any attention to it until I got here. It's actually 4 out of 7 because 8 counts me. So it's 4 out of 7 deputies that are comp board funded. And then of course I'm comp board funded. The comp board reimburses about 52% of that, our salaries. But I want to say, not that I'm here having to feel like I have to fight for our positions, but you know, you never know when that comes. I mean, we have 8 people, including myself, in the office. The amount of experience, the cumulative experience in my office is about 115 years of experience. You've got a 45-year veteran, 2 20-plus year veterans in my office, 1 10-plus year veteran, and 3 over 5 years, and then myself over 5 years. So, you know, out of 8 people, that's a lot of experience.
But that's a decrease because your predecessor probably added it to
200. Yeah, probably. He had 27 years in, so that might be a decrease. But unlike my predecessor, I have no turnover. I have no vacancies. So in the years that I've been there, the very first year I took office, I had 2 openings. We filled those, and we've not had any vacancies since. So I want to thank you all for your assistance in helping with the salaries and the supplements and such. You can go on to the next. That's just another, just showing our breakdown in our salaries. But I do want to say, out of all eight of us in the office, all eight of us are certified master, either deputy clerks or clerk. In 2021, my seven deputies were all certified through the Compensation Board program, as well as the Virginia Court Clerks Association Career Development Program. In 2020, I received the 9.8% increase in pay from the Comp Board. However, when my deputies were all certified in 2021, I took that pay out of my pay and divided it amongst them. Right now their names are in line with the Comp Board for their 3% increase. However, it's unfunded at this point. Every year we go in, the BCCA goes in asking for it. They have in the past couple of years awarded some, but it's sort of a waiting list. But I will say, as far as our staff, you have one of the most experienced and educated staffs in the state of Virginia. Truly. So that's, you know, I'm very proud of them for that. Last year, it passed in 2021, but it hasn't become effective until this year. The Comp Board did do a salary study between district court clerks' offices and circuit court clerks' offices. District court deputy clerks were making more than circuit court deputy clerks. And so they did do a salary study and did an increase on the base salaries for certain positions. Unfortunately for us, that only amounted to one of our deputy clerks was at that base salary as far as Comp Board funding. And so there was a $5,649 increase of the county, a reimbursement to the county for that position. But so it didn't amount to much for our county. We can go on. This is just showing you that, you know, our circuit and the Comp Board funding across the board for all of the counties. As you can see, you know, Madison, Green, Fluvanna, you know, we are all small jurisdictions, but if you look at the funding that we each receive, I mean, it's not a lot difference there. Albemarle is the only one that's sort of the standout in how much they receive, but our workloads and such, there's not a huge difference in the salaries or the reimbursement from the Comp Board. So you can go on. These are our Comp Board workloads by calendar year. As you can see, the main, the huge one there that has jumped up is our deed recordation. That has increased about 800 and some documents that we recorded above the previous year. There was a decrease in concealed handgun permits. However, that 2020 was sort of an outlier year anyway with the number that we did. As you can see, otherwise they sort of stayed about the same. And the reason for that, there's two couple reasons. One is anytime there's a change in presidency or presidential year, you'll see a change in concealed handgun permits. Second, the Code of Virginia changed January 1 of 2021, where all training for concealed handgun permits applications had to be in person, whereas before they could be online. And so everybody was rushing out to do the online training, or not rushing out, but doing online training and rushing in to do their concealed handgun permits before the end of 2020 so that they could have that benefit. But most of our, across the board, most of our numbers have remained about the same. There had been a drop in passports, but that was obviously related to COVID. We stopped doing them in March of 2020 and did not restart doing them again until July or August of 2021, just because of the needing to decrease the amount of people in and out of the building. We have started again. We started in August doing them again, and so we're back up full steam running with those. But because it's not what we considered a mandated service, mm-hmm. we needed to make sure we could provide the services that we're required by law to provide and have the people be able to be in the building. And so passports we had to sort of set that aside for a little bit. But you can go on. This is just a breakdown of our tax collections. Mainly our biggest tax is our probate tax and our grantor and grantee tax. Probates increased this past year to 233 probates. That's a pretty significant increase, and I expect that number really is just going to continue to increase with the aging community. Our tax recordation tax collection went from $414,000 to $649,000, so a $235,000 some change increase in collection of our recordation taxes. So we can go to the next slide. This is just, again, just another breakdown of our revenues with our estimates. 2021, our revenues were $1.15 million. And then it's estimated to be, this coming year, estimated to be in that 974 is our estimate. So you can go on to the next. Another breakdown. These are what's new in our office. I don't know who all in here may have a concealed carry permit, but as of July 1 of last year, we moved to the hard credit card-like concealed handgun permits versus the paper ones that we had been using. There have been a big hit. Have heard lots and lots of, you know, compliments on those. People like having those. A lot less replacements as far as people coming in having washed their card or, you know, whatever. So that's a good thing. Our comp board reimbursements, like the grants that we apply for, there's also things that we can apply for through the compensation board through our technology trust fund monies. And there are certain indicators if we do a certain amount of this, then we can ask for an additional funding. And so last year we got $10,000 extra from the comp board for digitization of our state highway plat books so that those can be available online within the office or if you have the secure remote access. This year we have asked for about $30,000 for our tax land books. Back land books to have them digitized so that we can have all of those on our computers. And so, again, this coming year, we're going to be asking for about $10,000 again. I've already explained we got the $47,000 grant. So we're really excited about that. We got another good audit. We got our audit done in the fall, and it was through June of last year. No deficiencies. All went very well. So that it's always a nail. You know, you know you're doing a good job, but you never know until, you know, that audit is something we all dread. Jeff already mentioned about drug court, definitely changing lives. I mean, it is something that I look forward to every week, seeing these individuals and their successes and being there every step of the way for them. There are some steps forward and steps backwards, but it's exciting to see that. And so I hopefully in the next, you know, this year we'll definitely have our first graduate, and, you know, so that'll be exciting. Judge Moore has announced that he is retiring as of the end of November of this year. In 2022, he is not asking to be reappointed, so he'll be leaving us, so we will have a change in who our judge will be. I'm not sure how that is going to affect the budget because we don't know who the judge is going to be. We don't know who their administrative assistant is going to be. And so when we get to that budget, there are a lot of changes there that we're going to be dealing with. I think, is that about it? Yeah. So that's it as far as my budget. Any questions relating to my budget?
No question. Okay. Thank you, dear.
Okay. The judge's budget. If that's quick. I don't have a presentation or anything. Yeah.
We don't have a choice, right?
What's that?
The judge's budget.
Not much.
Yes, but not really.
Yeah.
If we decide to short it, we better not show up in court.
That's right.
Yeah, and honestly, we're not really asking for much more. I think it's a $500 difference between what we had last year and what we're asking for this year. And I will say again, some of the numbers are unknown as far as because of the judge and the administrative assistant. I did find out on Friday, again, there's all sorts of bills that are introduced, and you never know exactly how they're going to fall. There has been a bill introduced to raise jury pay from $30 to $100. And so that potentially could change this budget, but it's really hard for me to say. I mean,
that would be a pass-through, though, wouldn't it? Or do we pay all the jury bill?
It depends. It depends on the type of jury. Depends on whether it's a criminal jury, civil jury. It all depends. So.
And going back to what Trevor was saying about Judge Moore's budget, again, we pay about what's a 30%, or is it more?
10. You're talking about the administrative assistant.
Yeah,
we pay 10%. 10% of her salary, and then 10% of their, I believe it's 10% of their operating expenses. And so we're kind of, again, we don't know who we'll be paired with. Now we're paired with Charlottesville, and we work with them. But a new judge could mean that we become paired with Green or Madison, or you know, you just don't know. So it's kind of an unknown right now. So as soon as I know, you all will know. So any all questions? Right. Okay.
Thank you so
thank
very
you.
Much. And thank you all for coming out. Well, I mean, until we find out what the school grads before, it's really not a whole lot we can discuss about the budget, especially with Mr. Fairchild not being here.
So, I think that's fine.
Yeah, I don't think we need. We have nothing.
We have plenty of time.
We have
the budget,
right? A closed session.
We do have a closed session.
It's something came up.
Mr. O'Brien?
Well, Mr. Chair. I move the Lanark County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-371187 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing litigation, actual litigation in connection with Zion's Crossroads Water and Sewer Project.
Do I have a second? Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors can meet again in session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge. One, only public business matter is lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-37A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended. And two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So
do I have a second?
Second. I'm a second girl.
A motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.